Pete, thanks for joining me today, my friend.
Good to be here, Todd.
All right, so I want to get a good insight from you on what you think. By the way, fantastic interview on Sean Ryan. If anybody hasn't watched that, I'm still going through it, but I didn't know all that about you, man.
Yeah.
Now I know your history.
Yeah.
Well, let's get right to it. I've got a lot prepared, so I guess I'm going to let you direct me through this, and I'll just jump in when I think I can add value.
Sure. Well, I mean, first let's start with Ukraine, or start with Iran, and then go to Ukraine. You covered a little bit of this, but you know, I checked last night. The price of oil was underneath $100 a barrel, and the Dow was 1% higher than it was at the beginning of hostilities. I only add that because none of us know what's going to happen. But one of the common ways to get a handle on what's going to happen is to tap into the wisdom of the crowd, and futures usually give you some indication of what people think. I'm not endorsing that or anything else. I just throw that out.
Sure.
But to recap, we saw what happened this weekend. Vice President Vance said on Saturday evening that after 21 hours of talks, the U.S. had walked away from the table after not being able to reach an agreement with the Iranian negotiators. Vance did say they had a number of substantive discussions with the Iranians. They made some good progress, but they could not come to a final agreement. And of course, that comes down to the two big sticking points. President Trump has said that any peace agreement requires Iran to give up its nuclear enrichment program. And Iran's maximalist 10-point plan says just the opposite. It says they have the right to continue enriching uranium. So the second most pressing issue is the obvious one, the opening of the Straits of Hormuz. Which, you know, is a critical waterway. Everyone knows 1/5 of global oil supplies flow through it. And it was shut down early last month when Iran began seeding it with mines. Those mine ships were destroyed, but not before they got at least 100 mines into the straits. So on Sunday, CENTCOM announced that two U.S.-guided missile destroyers were working minesweeping ops in the straits. They've begun that, and that's the path to opening them. Of course, as you and I know, Todd, under normal circumstances, minesweeping is incredibly difficult. But when you don't know where the mines were placed, it's a needle in a haystack. So I'm not a minesweeper, but I can tell you this is probably going to take a little bit of time to get 100% assurity that they've cleared them.
And I don't think Trump's in any hurry, to be honest. I think he's, those minesweepers didn't arrive for a long time. They weren't sent there immediately. I had Commander Salamander on recently, and he's like, they're in no hurry to get those boats over there. So ships. So just interesting to me. I don't think he's in a hurry to open this up. There's a lot of benefits that people aren't aware of. Europe's pressured, China's pressured. So we'll see. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Great. No, great points. And he said the same the last couple of days. He's changed his his comments to be, hey, I don't really care if we reach a final agreement. I'm in no hurry, said just what you said.
Yeah.
But importantly, there's no real wiggle room for the U.S. negotiators with regards to the Strait of Hormuz. Our two most powerful allies are Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And I looked, and both of them over this weekend reiterated that they will not tolerate any deal that leaves Iran as a gatekeeper in control of the straits. So, it's not like we can meet them halfway. They cannot control the straits. And that's a Middle Eastern requirement, not a U.S. one.
Yeah, because if they're, you know, this is a straight, there's one side is Iran, there's people on the other side, you know, they get a say of what goes through there too, right?
Yeah, and it's more than just oil for them. It's all their goods and services come back and forth. So it's even more, you know, more sensitive. So, you know, that brings us to the negotiations. And I think on our last episode, we talked about Trump, the negotiator. Mm-hmm. Do you have that Babylon Bee, shot of that Babylon Bee?
That's it, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So, you know, what we're really seeing is the mainstream media, the globalist mainstream media, is actually doing Trump's work for him. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about this technique. It's in his book, The Art of the Deal. You start with this insane, extreme position. You know, I'm going to give you $1 for your car. Yeah. And it's preposterous. But on the other side, you go, okay, I've got to bring it closer to my car's worth $10,000, you know, but he's only wants to give me $1. Is this guy crazy? Maybe I'll go down to $4,000 or $5,000 for it. And then, you know, you come back and the extreme position is it's, you know, negotiating 101, which he does, you know, at again, a PhD level. And in asymmetric warfare, it's also messaging 101, specifically and especially against an enemy that only respects raw and credible power. So, you know, all the jihadist Islamists like the IRGC, the Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis, they don't negotiate in good faith or respond to polite diplomacy. And this is not like a theory. This is a pattern that's been deeply etched in history over the past 50 years. They only respond to negotiations from a position of strength. And if you don't negotiate that way, they'll probe your weaknesses, exploit your hesitation, and interpret restraint as an invitation to push attacks. And we saw that where they convinced a prior U.S. administration to give them billions of dollars, plane load of cash, with no strings attached, which has been proven since to have gone directly to those groups I named earlier, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, against the rest of the Middle East and Western interests in the Middle East.
And that's what the Iranian resistance has said over and over. Look, you're just appeasing them, and they're very good at getting appeased, you know? And so, you know, billions of cash and, okay, just a little more, and it never happens.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's just to educate all of us, you got to say it out loud. The apocalyptic rhetoric is the only language they understand. Mm-hmm. And if you just go back to last week, it worked. You know, Iran quickly blinked, floated the ceasefire, tied to reopening the strait. And you know, that's what we talked about with J.D. Vance a few minutes ago. Now, they also did. Back to that 50-year pattern, they also quickly violated their own promise and closed the strait back up, which, you know, taking this to the next step, there's actually a negotiating style they use, which is called taqiyya. Mm-hmm. It's a Shiite name, and Muslim scholars teach it. There's several forms of taqiyya, but the best known is that you're allowed to lie to non-believers to advance the cause of Islam. And we've dealt with that so long since the Iran hostage negotiations that it's become just known. And I believe that's why we walked away from negotiations a month and a half ago. And I know that's why J.D. Vance walked away the other day. So, you know, once again, exercise critical thinking and caution as we watch the news and the commentary on Iran in the coming days, because there is tons of AI propaganda out there. I think we have a shot of some AI propaganda.
Yep. That's Google Gemini image on the image. They forgot to remove the AI generated image logo.
Yep.
So
Yep. And then I mentioned, you know, the globalist mainstream media doing their best to counter Trump, but what they're actually continue to do is underscore that negotiating tactic of the extreme first position, making the other side say, this guy's crazy, he might actually do it. Well, you know, we've got enough talk of the 25th Amendment and things from our own media to underscore just that, and mm-hmm. to support what Trump is actually trying to do in a supportive way. Mm-hmm. So the other part, though, that's much more serious, I think, about the press prejudice is you're seeing almost no coverage of the Iranian people, and mm-hmm. not just in Iran, but the refugees all around the U.S. and around Europe, who continue to protest in massive numbers. And we saw it in Washington, D.C. on Sunday. And of course, you know, it got zero media coverage. Mm-hmm. So you're not seeing the people. And I said this in our last episode, I'll say it again to President Trump and his administration. That's what needs to be emphasized every time they talk about what's up next, what we're doing. And of course, keeping in mind the importance of the people, that this is about the Iranian people, all tactics, techniques, and procedures should complement that philosophy. Mm-hmm. So as far as next steps to open the straits, just from what I've been told from my sources, I think Iran's going to realize it made a huge mistake. The U.S. has learned quickly on the approach to integrating joint assets to create a comprehensive and lethal multi-layered protection system. And if you just think about it, subsurface, you got subs. On the surface, you have small boats, but you have attack helos and A-10s up to, you know, visual VFR, so they mm-hmm. can actually spot targets. Then higher up, you've got the drones and the AWACS providing continuous surveillance. And then, of course, fast movers, fighter jets, if needed. But this multi-layered attack, and no one fights jointly, integrates assets better than the U.S. military. You know, I do not think it's a difficult problem. I think they'll have the straits open. But again, you know, we're going to have to see how Iran reacts and how President Trump reacts too. He's already said, I warned that if these ships approach our blockade, they'll be destroyed using the same system used against the drug traffickers.
Well, there's a story out, and I'll just, here it is. There was a Chinese ship that was approaching the straits, and then it was turned around. Let me get that. So anyway, there was a Chinese ship that was coming, trying to break the blockade, and it turned around. So anyway, that's out there.
Yep. So we'll watch and see. We'll keep a close eye on it, and continue to try to report ground truth to our viewers.
Definitely.
So that's Iran switching over to Ukraine now. You know, before we go into Ukraine, I just wanted to reiterate something because we can't say it enough. And Todd, I'll speak for you a little bit here. Mm-hmm. You know, we in this podcast, we do not have a side. We're not for or against Ukraine. We're not for or against Russia. We're not falling into, that's a globalist trap to mm-hmm. make every issue a binary issue. You have to be for one side or against the other. And of course, that makes no sense. When it comes to sense making, you have to gather information to understand the full picture before you take a position or a side. And that's the only way you have any credibility. The downside of falling into the globalist trap is you take a side right off the bat, and then you close your mind to any other information. And it does you no good. You're not contributing. And so I just reiterate that we're not for or against either side. We're especially not for or against the Ukrainians. What we are for the Ukrainians is we understand the position they've been put into.
Sure, they've been lied to.
They've been lied to. They've been forced into this war. They're in a war they really can't back out of because they're being led by an administration whose loyalty is to the EU and his handlers, not the people of Ukraine. That's very obvious. We're going to show some clips that reinforce that in a minute.
But yeah, let me just say, I want to add to that because, you know, I was there during the invasion. I walked across the border on foot. I dodged the Russians. I exactly what you're saying. The Ukrainian people were very good to me. They got me out. And I had a refugee family in my house for 8 months. So, you know, I'm not anti-Ukraine at all. I'm pro-humanity. I'm anti-sense of death, and I want this war to end. I'm tired of Christians killing Christians. It needs to end. So back to you.
Yeah. And again, the Ukraine and Russia's most valuable natural resource is their patriots. And they're the ones who are, you know, living in this hell on the battlefield, some living, the lucky ones, you know, well over a million total dead, probably twice that number injured. They're the ones suffering. They're the ones we're trying to stand up for when we talk about Ukraine and talk about the need to end the fighting as quickly as possible. So with regards to Ukraine, the biggest news on Ukraine, I think, and you know, Todd, if you agree, is the election that just happened in Hungary.
Yes.
And, you know, Elon Musk came right out and stated that the Soros organization has seized power in Hungary after the parliamentary elections. And, you know, I don't know enough about this one yet, and I'll turn it over to you in a second, Todd. But we're going to look at this and see if all the hallmarks of another color revolution were in play here. Certainly that was what everyone suspected leading up to it. Just last week, intelligence came out that proved that Romania's election, which happened a few months back, was 100% thrown. Yes. And it was thrown by their most common tactic, which is go in, bribe Supreme Court level justices, and use lawfare to call off the election or to question the election, question the candidate, get a new election, and then the new election is always won by the EU candidate. So we'll be watching that, but I think we have a shot of the new Hungarian PM Péter Magyar and his new positions, which are different, and everyone's waiting on these to see what's going to happen.
Well, it's been pretty brutal already. I mean, he's immediately, you know, unlocking the immigration, the LGBT stuff. I mean, the whole society is going to be destroyed.
Wow.
And,
wow.
But I'm the only thing that gives me a little hope is that, and I was talking to my Eurobytes guys, we have a European podcast out of Germany every week, and they're saying, well, all of Europe is moving to the right. So maybe Orban held out long enough so that just natural course will take, you know, Ireland is erupting right now. You're not getting coverage of it, but the Irish are taking back their country, it looks like, which is phenomenal news. So if we can get Western Europe to move to the right, maybe Central Europe would have saved the day and held out long enough against the globalist tyranny. But we'll see. But
back to you. Yeah, and it does turn out to be another EU color revolution. Again, the president, in my opinion, needs to sign an executive order and make color revolutions like assassinations, illegal for any government employee to coordinate or execute.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything on what's his name, Fico, out of I believe
that's Slovakia. True.
Slovakia, yep. Right? I mean, he was shot and survived, luckily, but he was the one holding the line against a lot of this. So we haven't heard a peep on that.
Yep. But, well, again, more to follow. We'll monitor it. So let's move to the battlefield. I think Todd, you have a video, anti-drone video.
Yeah, I got that. This is on the Ukrainian side, right?
This is on the Russian side, but Ukraine has new anti-drone technology, which is effective both sides. It was only a matter of time. Israel also invented a laser they're having very good results with in the Middle East.
Yeah, so the FAA just did a deal with the Department of War on the southern border to do the same, activated high-energy lasers against drones on our southern border, which is way overdue. But are you ready for the video, or do you want to – it's a short one.
Yeah, go ahead with the video. Okay. It's just kind of cool. It shows a simple solution. That's the reason I like that is it's the same reaction you have when you swish a McDonald's wrapper into the wastebasket when you're walking through your office. Exactly. We've seen these other anti-drone videos. When you hit the drone, it's time for celebration. But it's changing the battlefield significantly. It's already lessened the amount of long-range drones that are attacking both sides, Ukraine and Russia. And of course, it's changed the dynamic on the front lines, most importantly, because you've got these handheld devices that are fairly simple, point and shoot.
Part of this historic announcement, we have such a great cultural fit as companies. So we're very, very excited to be Embraer's newest customer. We launched our airline in April of 21, and our target is focusing on small secondary airports of large metro areas. We've carried over 8 million customers since we started on 63,000 flights. And we've done all these things with 1,200 of the greatest crew members I could ever imagine having. And many of them are here with me today. This is the right airplane for us. It's going to open up opportunities for us that no other aircraft can serve. The best thing about the airplane, of course, is you will not find a middle seat on this airplane. It doesn't exist. We won't have any to offer. It's going to be the best cabin in the United States, and we're so excited about that. This is going to elevate our experience to the highest level, and we think our customers are absolutely going to love the airplane.
Life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
This is tough, but your finances don't have to be. I'm David Cross, and I'm a certified divorce financial analyst practitioner. My job is to help you get a fair financial settlement in your divorce and to guide you to smarter money decisions. Find out how we can help you. U.S. Asset Management, it's your money. Your future.
And we call this, the drones are not the main aspect of this war. It's the light infantry tactics, techniques, and procedures that are the driving factor and will continue to be. So the result of that is the front lines have been not stagnant. There's still movements, especially Russia's made some large, significant movements down in the south, in the Zaporizhia area. And of course, that's very serious if that continues to go Russia's way. But it's changed everything. Both sides are kind of retooling and reassessing their own tactics and techniques. And that's one of the reasons why the front lines have been so stagnant. So that's that. Then, we go to Okay, so what else about the war is relevant? I think we have that Donald Trump Jr.
Shot. I do have that. Yeah, the video. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, and it's just Trump saying what we've been pointing out in most episodes. When is something going to be done about the corruption that is not theoretical? They've already caught, and you know, Zelensky's people have resigned. Then they come back. But when is something to be done on it? You can show it if you want.
What about the same from the Ukraine side? Are there people over there that are willing to, you know, jump in and step up and say, hey, yeah, this is nonsense and this is what's going on? I mean, you know, what's the state of play in Kiev? I think most Americans are fed up. I wonder if some of those people are willing to cooperate now.
My reporting indicates that Steve Witkoff, who's done a great job negotiating all across the world, including in Ukraine, recently was given some information from some Ukrainian government officials that could be very, very helpful to the last decade of understanding some of the corruption going on and the relationships between our two countries and some of the people who profited or created fraud or did other things, tried to create political influence through untoward means. So,
yeah, maybe it is time. I mean, the corruption has been obvious for a decade. Yeah.
Right. And it's so the one of the points of showing that is it's not just to do the right thing and to find out where our taxpayer money actually went, which was fraud, waste, and abuse. It's to reiterate that, you know, any country that is mired in corruption like that cannot win on the battlefield. To win on the battlefield, you have to make good decisions and solve complex problems. You have to use common sense. You can't use common sense. You can't make good decisions when your decisions are tainted by profit or what's going to be best for you in the future. It's not about you or us or me. It's about the guys on the ground and what you're trying to accomplish on the battlefield. That corruption is not just a messy little detail that needs to be cleaned up. It's one of the reasons that the Ukraine has been so handcuffed in their attempt to thwart the attacks by Russia and to win this war. Not bad enough, I think you got a picture of Boris Johnson.
Yes, I do. Visited. One second.
Yeah. Here.
I swapped out, I did an extensive article on our Eastern European site, Tsarism.com. So I put that one up instead.
Sure.
This is the website if people want to see it. It covers everything from Poland, the old Tsarist Empire from Poland all the way to San Francisco. But Boris went back to Ukraine and to visit the troops after, you know, blood is on his hands, a million guys. He kept the war going. And he's over there showing the flag and trying to keep the morale up as, you know, I think Ukraine is tired of the war, not just the corruption. But back to you.
Yeah. And he's been nonstop back and forth. You know, this is, to me, just a travesty beyond belief. His comments was, I see their fatigue. After talking with Ukrainian soldiers on the front line, I see their fatigue and a natural human desire for the war to end. I felt anger at the West's lack of support, he said, but Ukraine can win this. That's his expert military commentary. As Todd just said, he's the single-handedly tubed, ruined the any potential for Minsk 1 or 2 to be approved. Zelensky had already initialed Minsk 2, and Johnson went over and said, don't sign anything, keep fighting, you can win this. And, you know, this massive guy who's, you know, overweight, never served in the military, is telling Ukraine to continue fighting, is telling these young men to keep giving their life, and we'll just keep giving you, you know, resources. It makes no sense. And it's not just him. Do you have Petraeus was over there at the same time? So
yeah, one
so
second.
The big influencers are all over there.
Here we go. This one.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's Petraeus. And you know,
I can. So do you Petraeus, want the video or what do you want?
Nah, it's okay. It's okay. I've got some of his comments right here. He said, you know, Russia no longer has the upper hand in the war against Ukraine. I think it's remarkable that Russia no longer has the upper hand. Russia heavily outnumbers Ukraine. It outguns Ukraine. It has an economy 10 to 12 times the size of Ukraine's. And yet Ukrainian forces right now are stopping the Russians cold on the front lines, he added. The reason I read that is because, remember, the whole supposed purpose of the EU support for the war is that if we don't stop Russia now, they're going to take over all of Europe. But here again, they expose their hypocrisy when they basically mock and denigrate Russia's military and say, you know, you're 10 to 12 times the size and you're getting beaten. So why is that country a threat to Europe is the question everyone should ask. It's not. And it never has stated it wanted to be. But, you know, his final comment was on the front lines, which is all important. The Russians have actually achieved less than the Ukrainians have in the last 2 weeks. And I don't know what that's supposed to mean. It's gobbledygook. It doesn't say anything about what's happened on the battlefield. It's actually not accurate. In total terrain, the Ukrainians have not taken the amount of the square kilometers that Russia has in the last 2 weeks, but it's a ridiculous metric to throw out there.
Let me jump in here. There's a new wrinkle this morning. You may not have seen it, but there's a big report out that Ukraine is now taking Russian positions with robots and drones. So I see that as kind of a propaganda, info war, you know, Empire Strikes Back kind of thing. Let me just play this short. I played it in the cold open, but I'm just going to play this short video.
Ні, вже на полі бою. І його творить Україна. Це наші наземні роботизовані комплекси. Вперше в історії цієї війни ворожу позицію було взято виключно безпілотними платформами НРК та дронами. Окупанти здалися в полон. І цю операцію виконали без участі піхоти і без втрат з нашого боку. Ратель, Терміт, Ардал, Рись, Змій, Протектор, Воля і інші наші НРК. Лише за 3 місяці виконали на фронті вже більше 22 тисяч місій. Іншими словами, більше 22 тисяч разів збережено життя.
So, I'm sure they have a strong, I mean, Ukrainians are innovative. I'm sure they have a innovative garage robotic, you know, business, but an industrial, you know, somewhat of an industrial capability, but I don't see them making enough robots to take over the Russian front. I mean, what say you?
Yeah, of course not. And I've not seen a single instance where, remember, the robot's just a ground drone. Yeah. And, you know, it has all the same potential, but all the same shortcomings as an air drone. And, you know, they're easily destroyed. Russia's got more drones now than Ukraine. This has been another pattern. It's each when the news cycle is failing, you know, the Ukrainian side, they come up with some potential technological breakthrough or whatever, and that's not going to save them. And you know, that's what we'll talk about next. So first, back to the corruption. Do you have the Starmer, the shot of, the EU is negotiating the possibility of allowing Ukraine to purchase British weapons using the EU loan. So Bloomberg reports that the UK and the EU are negotiating to allow Ukraine to purchase British weapons using the frozen loan of 90 billion euros. So you're loaning the money to buy, you know, weapons off you. And this is it's just a microcosm of the massive money laundering that is really the motivator behind the EU's involvement in this thing and what they thought they were going to be pulling off until Trump threw a monkey wrench into it. Give them money. They buy European weapons. They put the EU's military-industrial complex on a massive growth curve, which, you know, these guys are all benefactors of. Mm-hmm. So it's not funny. It's kind of disgusting that they do it right in your face like this. But that's the insanity of this war. And then we'll go on. Do you have the Budenov, the statement by Budenov? And Budenov is really the second most powerful guy in Ukraine right now. And he just stated Ukraine is unable to independently produce military equipment. He's, you know, the head of Zelensky's office, but he also runs all their drone warfare aspects. He commands and controls them. So, you know, this we've been pointing out from the beginning. This is the predicament these influencers and the EU have put Ukraine into. So now, you know, wherever you think the war is, they've got to fight it without a military industrial complex. They are truly a proxy military. Mm-hmm. And the problem with being a proxy military is you're depending on other people for what's going to either enable you to win or force you to lose. And it's a horrible position to be put in, but that's where they're at. There's no change in that. They're not going to be able to build factories and create a military industrial complex, especially not one that can compete with Russia's, which, yeah, as you know, we've already heard, 10 to 12 times the size, and you know their economy is about the same. So that's the military industrial complex side. Now on, there's another report on there about Ukraine's farmers are being severely affected by the blockade, and what the blockade has done is caused a skyrocket in prices of fertilizers, specifically mineral-based fertilizers, and economists are predicting that agricultural products exports from Ukraine will drop by 40%.
That's big because Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe. It literally feeds a lot of Europe. The soil is black. It's very productive. And that's what BlackRock and a lot of these people, companies want. But it's also possibly leading to famine in parts of the world because you've got the routes and resources being shut off. You know, the Panama Canal, the Strait of Hormuz, you got the Red Sea in play. There's a lot of very dangerous things happening because there's a lag time. You know, you shut off the fertilizer, it's 6-8 months and then you have no food. So it's not good. Back to you.
Yeah. So that's one resource. Let's go to another one. Human resource. And I think you have a story up there about the men aged 23 and under. So, you know, in any war, you know, a foundational demographic is 18 to 23. Especially a war like this one where you've already lost over a million men. But what's happened here is those men have fled the country. They're, you know, with support from their parents and their relatives. This number is estimated to be twice what you see here. It's 400,000 men registered in European countries as refugees, as visitors, temporary visas, all across Europe. Age 18 to 23, but that number is believed to be about 800,000 because there's at least 400,000 who are not registered, who are living kind of like Anne Frank, living with families, living with relatives, and I don't put that in. The relevance of that is these people are voting with their feet. It's not just us saying the purpose of the Ukraine war doesn't make sense and the war doesn't make sense. It's the Ukrainian people. And our next video just underscores that again. It's the forced conscription one. If you can throw that up, Todd.
Yeah, and I had, the one you sent me, I couldn't download, but I think I've got maybe the same one or similar. It gets the point across, but here we go.
Yeah, I've got 10 of them sitting on the computer right now.
Держи верисакет.
Да? Стить людину.
Подержи верисакет.
Снимайте номера.
Номера снимайте.
So there you have the civilians trying to stop the forced conscription.
Yeah, senior citizens, guys in their 40s, and just to reiterate, we're not showing that to say, you know, Ukraine can't win. We're showing that to give the people a voice. That only happens when you're the administration, the Zelensky administration in this case, their communication of the purpose of the requirement to continue fighting has failed miserably. It's not working. The Ukrainian people are saying, we don't know, we don't agree, we're not going. And when we've been showing these for months, so when the people are fighting back like that, and it never subsides, you just see more and more civilians, you know, fighting for the guys being forcefully conscripted. And on top of all that, you know, unfortunately, I'll just say this again, never in history has an army won on the battlefield that had to forcefully conscript its soldiers. And that's not a reflection on Ukrainian people as if they're, you know, cowardly or something. That's a reflection on the Ukrainian administration and those who back it and their fake purpose for this war, which cannot be translated into a persuasion to the people. So that's why we show that, to give a voice to the Ukrainian people. It's horrific that it's still going on, but we wanted you to see it. And then,
well, there's one more thing I want to jump in there, because, you know, one thing Trump has done and people need to realize is there are no American forces in Ukraine. The guys, the previous administration wanted that as an eventuality. I mean, the chief of staff of the Air Force, I forget his name, he basically said, you know, yeah, we're going to be there sooner than later. He was fired by Trump. But you know what? I mean, that's, I'll give that one to Trump. We're not over there.
Yeah, you know? I will too. And you can't play those videos enough. If those guys could scream and they knew that these videos were being watched in America, they'd say, come help us. And, you know, it's almost like the ethnic Russians from 14 to 21. We should have probably gone in and helped them. And at this point, the only thing we should be doing in Ukraine is helping the people not get forcefully conscripted.
Well, we should force, the best thing we can do is end the war. You know, is shut off the flow and force a peace settlement. You know, I did an event well over a year ago, and I think it was in Connecticut. We were doing events around the country trying to stop the war, just bringing speakers. And I had a Ukrainian, and the message of the event was, we need to end the war. We don't want to support Ukraine to enable this war. We want to end it, remove our support, and end the war, because that's the best thing for everybody. And this Ukrainian guy came up to me and said, you know, I left Ukraine. You should definitely go stop this, you know, be involved, and America should stop the Russians. I'm like, dude, you're in America. You should be over there if that's what you think. You should be fighting, my friend. So anyway, just I thought of that, but back to you.
Yeah, spot on. That's it. I think there's a thing of Pavel Durov that I just wanted to share with to our viewers. Mm-hmm. He's correct about this. I've known this for a long time. And of course, if you remember 20 to 2024, when they were not just monitoring our communication, but using it, he's right about WhatsApp. And they've done that to themselves. The brand was good, but don't ever think you're communications are secure on WhatsApp. And Durov is, in my opinion, and in opinion of some very highly technical comms experts, the most secure system out there is Telegram. And he has pledged that security. That's why he can't go back to Moscow. He would not give Moscow any backdoor access, and he was arrested in France for the same thing. But he's a straight shooter, and it's been known about WhatsApp for a while. So yeah, be careful with your comms.
All right, Pete, thank you for joining us. Hopefully you'll be back next week if I can get an hour in your busy schedule. But thank you.
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right, take care, Pete.
Good talking to you.